Well, welcome, everybody. We're so happy to join this podcast, which is titled Why Culture Still Fails in the Age of AI and How Do Leaders Actually Change Behavior? So I'm pleased to be with someone I've recently researched, Simon Thompson. He spent the first part of his career as a professional actor, which is cool because I've never acted, but I think I'm gonna hear some really cool stuff today. But not the actor of like performing downtown and things you see. He brought drama to homeless shelters, refugee centers, and youth programs, which I'm excited to hear about. You know, and the work taught him something critical, and that critical thinking is the right facilitation of how you can fundamentally shift how people see themselves and what they're truly capable of, which our listeners are dying to know. What I read was this insight led to this learning and development over the past 20 years. And since I think it's about 2002, you've been with Steps Drama, which I'm excited to hear about. You're not only a board member, shareholder, but you lead their U.S. operations as the relationship director, which is cool. You know, and I know you helped a lot of people in the City of London, organizational change, Bank of England. But today we're going to talk about something that's decades studying, how you actually develop people in high pressure, high volume environments, not with theory and practice. So think about the contact center industry, thousands of employees globally, you know, what works, what's going. But I'm excited about this. I've been excited about this one all day. So we're going to get right into it. Simon, thank you for joining us. Our listeners are going to take some key learnings from you today, hopefully deploy into their organization. Let's get going with question number one. So everybody's talking about this AI myth. I mean, you can open up LinkedIn, as I know you're like me, you do. Everybody's talking about this magic sauce. As organizations are accelerating this AI adoption, a lot of them struggle to shift everyday behaviors in the contact centers. Specifically, like when you think about we're automating interactions, culture sometimes lags behind the technology. So, you know, my question is, you know, why does behavior remain so difficult, even when the tools tell you exactly what needs to happen? Let's talk about that one.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you. And it's nice to meet you too. And just to warn you, I've looked you up too. And the disappointing thing is, I think we're going to agree on an awful lot. I watched you talking about culture. And genuinely, Jim, you talked about servant leadership. And we may or may not have the same idea in our heads around what that means. But I think the principles, absolutely, I share with you. And the answer to your question, Jim, I think is, I don't think there's one silver bullet. I don't think there's one answer. Think, and by the way, everything I've learned from other people, right? I've had school for me. I think one of the answers, a wise guy called Nick Shackleton-Jones, who wrote a really influential book for me called How People Learn, he said education gets in the way of learning, right? And I thought that's just got to be a whole truth for me because school was a nightmare. And I think people learn through experience. And I think that's one of the fundamentals. As people scratch their heads, good, well-intended leadership scratch their heads thinking, I know we should take AI seriously. This is happening. We need to be enthusiastic about it. But we don't really know how to adopt it. It could save us a whole lot of money. So I think part of the issue, Jim, and I say this not wanting to sound like I know everything, I think that what people are getting a lot is training. And I don't know if that's always great development. Because if you think in a contact center, it's often asynchronous learning. People are given stuff. And it's what I would call, and again, Jim, I'm interested to know what you think, because I don't know that I'm completely right. But a lot of it is convergent learning. Like, we work in McDonald's, all our burgers have got to be consistent. So this is how we flip them. Rather than what I believe in, which is divergent thinking, where you allow people to have a shared experience where you hold up a mirror to the job that they actually do, a researched mirror, so that they can look in that mirror and go, flipping heck, that's what I face into every day. And then they have the opportunity to listen to their peers about what constitutes best practice. And often there's not one answer. And it can be really tough working in a contact center because you're usually there to deal with somebody's grievance, right? They're not ringing you up to tell you how happy they are with your product and service. So think I think the answer is many, many things, but I think you can train people well. But I think if you really want to change that culture, then I think you need to get in the trenches with people a little bit more. And I think that's maybe what is missing. I don't know, Jim. Good answer. What do you think?
It's actually a pleasant answer for me. And here's why. So number one, what you said was learn from other people. I will tell you a story about me. I started my career as an agent. And my CEO of VTech, ETS Labs today, his name's Matt Rocco. I was an agent. I was a nobody, is what I would call myself. He reached out to me when he hired me first and basically says, what do you want to do with your career? And I just had back then, less than $10 an hour, I think. I had green screens. That's how long I've been in the business. And I said, man, I'd like to have your job someday because I loved your office. And what he did in that moment changed my life. He literally mentored me throughout my career. I didn't really work directly for him. He was a big shot. But for whatever reason, he mentored me. I learned from him. So I agree 100% on that. And the second part is the training. I remember when I went through training, and it was asynchronous. And the trainers would get a book, get a PowerPoint presentation, tell you to write all this stuff, give you a binder that you had to remember. And then, as soon as you get the first call, it's something that wasn't covered in training. So what we've done to actually elevate our training is we're doing simulation training now. So there is still classroom. There is hard training, learning, right? Mm-hmm. But then it's in practice. But the cool part about a simulation AI-based training is I don't have to worry about you messing up because they're all simulators. So literally you're having conversations with people. So you get to go the experience. And to answer your question, yeah, rarely anybody calls to say, I'm calling you just to tell you how great you are. So you get to hear some of those complaints and you get to actually interact with their AI robotic bot to actually have the conversation. And now you're learning of what the real experience is going to be, but you're not doing that to a live customer and a live agent. You're actually having those conversations. So I think we're aligned 100% on that.
And you're not necessarily equipped. So in that training manual, there may be some very wise thinking around models that you can keep in your head so that you know where you're going with a conversation, but they don't really give you the opportunity to manage the emotional stuff. Yep. That may take you completely by surprise, anger, tears, whatever it might be. Jim, I wonder whether, I don't know, to folk who are listening to folk who are privileged enough to have a job, we've just raised a glass to our non-exec chair who's been with us for years. And he's very, very different to me. He's ended up being a really good friend. He's helped us grow our business exponentially. At some point, somebody has noticed you, right? And they've chosen to lift you up, shine a light on you, get in the trenches with you, affirm the stuff that you're good at so you can do more of it. But also, nudge you with their pointy elbows, and it can really hurt sometimes, and point out truths about you that might be really hard to hear. And that's certainly been my experience. And then when I've gotten over myself and I've thought about what's actually been said, he's nearly always been right, right? So that's where an awful lot of my learning has come from. It's about surrounding yourself with people who don't necessarily think the same way, share the same values, who you enjoy working with, but who aren't afraid just to kind of just poke you sometimes and do what your CEO did, sort of mentor you. And I it's really difficult in a contact center because you could be dealing with thousands and thousands of people. But unless you're willing to get to know those people, how are you going to know what their development stuff really is? And how are you going to know the shining stars that you've got and lift them up and turn them into the next CEO?
Absolutely. And you bring up a good point because you have to have multiple mentors because you need someone who's going to be giving you transparent feedback. And the problem with most people, the way God has built us, is we're always in the defense mode. When someone says you've done something wrong, we want to defend and say why I did it. I remember, I have millions of examples, but I remember and obviously I have a big ego, right? Because we all do. By the way, people think egos are good if you can semi-control it. And I use the word I a lot. And I did this. It's really not me. It's my teams. My teams have actually done this. But it takes someone who loves you enough to care about you enough to point that out is, hey, it wasn't you. It was your team is just one example, which I've learned the hard way. But not everybody does that. And you're absolutely right in our business. So good deal. That was a great one. So let's talk about this. You spent these decades in this experimental drama-based learning and being in the contact center from day one, I get drama, right? But how did you use this to influence? Because that's really what leadership is, influence. It's nothing more, nothing less. So how do you influence that change in the behavior that you're looking for using the drama?
Thank you, Jim. I think that going back to our non-exec chair, he helped us find words to describe what sometimes is a little bit hard to describe. So we believe in what we call, Jim, this is a 1 minute speech, right? We believe in what we call see it, own it, change it, live it. And every single learning intervention, be it in contact centers or with the senior team in some fancy global organization, follows the four principles of see it, own it, change it, live it. And if you think, we think a lot of well-intended learning starts at what we would call own it. So you get your leaders in the room, you get your contact center of people in a room, and you would say, we are going to do everything in our power to enable you to do customer service or leadership or culture change. We're going to do everything in our power to help you with that. We've got some great speakers to come in. We've got a toolkit to die for. And we're going to do everything we can to put yourself or your finger on the pulse of current thinking when it comes to what makes what service excellence in a customer center in 2025, because it's already different to 24 or 26. We think if you start there, you may have lost some of your audience already, because you will have a cohort of people sitting there thinking, well, hang on a minute. Nobody told me I wasn't good at this stuff. In fact, I think I'm probably going to be the next CEO. So why don't I mentally check out of here and leave you with Jim, because he's got some real development needs. So we think at that point, at that own it point, if that's where you start, then you've lost people. So in our humble belief, Jim, if the very first thing you do when you get that leadership group in a room or on a Zoom is hold up that really credible, well-researched mirror that holds up a reflection of their everyday experience. So a typical day in the life of a contact center, a typical day in the life of a boardroom meeting. And if we've done our job in partnership well, and we've picked out that research well and identified the things that matter to more than several people, by the way, not just what leadership think are the issues, you'll get a visceral connection. People will watch that drama play out either through film or live actors in the room. We are not the entertainment, right? We're hardwired to learning. And if we've done our job properly, people will sit there and they'll think, flipping egg, that is exactly what I face into every day. And do you know what? I didn't know when I say that stuff, it impacts on people in the way it does. And actually, maybe Jim's a little bit better than I thought he was. If you can get that visceral connection, then you're more likely to have a group of people that go, do you know what? I'm up for this. I understand the need for change. I've had an experience that I recognize, and I now feel I'm willing to give me the toolkit. Let's hear the speakers, put my finger on the pulse of current thinking. And then, Jim, what you do is you draw on the wisdom of the crowd. So we move from see it, own it, to change it. So what are the things you need to change down here in Puerto Rico? Because we're not like those weird people in New York. We're different. We're special. So what are the little things that you could change that would make a really big difference? And then the last part, Jim, and the end of my big speech is really, really important. How do you get people to really live that? So we're not in the business of just creating a two-hour really exciting conversation. What is actually going to be different? How do you make being brilliant at customer service simply the way we do things around here next week, in 6 weeks' time, in 6 months? So I hope that helps in terms of that's how we use drama to bring about change.
It's so enlightening, though, because you brought a lot of points that I remember earlier in my career when I was young. We used to call it flavor of the month. They would send you to class, go take this training because you all need it, right? Whether you needed it or not. I remember one point in my career, I was the top salesperson in the entire, like I won presidential awards, all sorts of stuff. And they're sending me to the flavor of the month, was what I used to call it, training on. I remember I did Robert Caress effective negotiation training. And all of us were in this room doing this training. And I was that guy because I was young in my career. That's when I first started out. I was doing exactly what you said. I don't need this. He should be in here. That yeah. one really needs it. And by the way, it didn't affect me until I got more mature in my career, understanding. Like, I loved what you say. We see it, not seeing it the right way all the time, but we see it, but owning it. Like, who am I to say I can't learn from this, while instead of pointing outwards, which I shouldn't be doing, again, learned over. But the hardest part is to change it. It takes repetitive change. John Maxwell will tell you, you have to repeat it 8 times before you heard it. I got to tell you, I wish it was only 8 with me, because I was young. Probably was more like 12 or 15. But once I saw it, you're right, I was able to live it. Awesome, awesome lesson, yeah, for sure.
I think just to add to that, and you're kind of making me think this, but when it comes to the change it bit, why would you not make a virtue of asking the people that actually do the job? And again, if you think about when people do training needs analysis, right? I'm not trying to take the mick out of it, but it's often important people wandering around, wondering what they think less important people need. You know, why not ask them and make that a large part of the solution? Full stop. Full stop.
It's so funny you say that, because it took us, both of us in our careers, we've been in this a long time, but we do see these things, and you're 100% correct. I say the same about marketing. Marketing's never taken a call a day in their life, and they're telling us how to sell the product, right? It's the same thing we go through, but you're absolutely right. All right, let's go on to question number 4. These leaders set values and behavioral standards. We all know we got the playbook, right? This is what our expectations are. But the frontline people always have conflict, pressures, like they'll get pressure. So, you know, they might give them a quality score, might give them a scorecard, as we all know. But, you know, what actually, in your opinion, how do you actually move the needle beyond, let's call it a checkbox?
Yeah. Okay. One of the things we did a couple of years ago was, I'm deeply proud of our client list, Jim. And if there's time, I'd like to tell you about. So we work.
Sure.
All around the world. We're in India, America, UK. We work with some of the biggest global folk. We awesome. Tend to work with leadership. I'm deeply proud of the fact that we trained every single bus driver in London in a 2-day customer service program, right? That's 24,000 people. It's massive, right?
So when I go to London, I can drive the bus, I can ride the bus knowing that I'll be safe and have a great experience.
Yes. And my dad was a bus driver, and that is absolutely true, Jim. And I'm not saying we changed the world, but it was matched with a counter campaign with the public in London, billboards just saying, when you get on a bus, why not say hello, London? Why not say hello to that bus driver and see what happens when you smile, right? Because they're human beings. A circuitous way of answering your question. We did some research where we had the privilege of asking people that have been responsible in their careers for large-scale change programs. And we asked them which ones bombed and which ones succeeded. And then we kind of sieved out what the commonality was in the ones that had succeeded. So to answer your question, how do you really move the dial? You haven't got a hope in hell of changing anything if your leadership team are not absolutely behind what you're doing. No point signing it off a board with a level of skepticism. They've got to really believe that this is what the business needs. And then critical, they need to be the role models, right? They need to be walking around, manifesting those values, manifesting those behaviors, and being visibly accountable for that, right? Then you can think about also reward and recognition. What are you going to do for the people on the front line that surprise you, Jim, sometimes by going the extra mile? So Bob in the mailroom actually has got his whole team together and they've discussed this and they've made some changes. And suddenly Bob is this sort of superstar and you've got stories that you can tell about success. So there's reward and recognition. There's also leaders, you know, it's not just about signing off on the board and then coming back and holding that learning team to account 6 months later to say, what's the ROI on this? And all important stuff. But in the interim, your leaders need to be writing about it, talking about it, asking about it in every team meeting. How are we getting on? Does it feel like we're changing around here? And I think unless so that's the wisdom of the crowd, sift out from clever people. And they are principles that we try and share whenever we're about to embark on a large scale thing, be it for the senior leadership group in a law firm or be it for wonderful folk in a contact center or bus drivers. Doesn't change. But I think unless you've got that stuff in place, you ain't changing nothing. You ain't changing
yeah.
nothing.
And you bring up a good point, because you think about it. A lot of people, I've seen it, we've been in the industry together for a long time. A lot of people try to outsource that part of their business. Like, go ahead, hire this trainer and do it. But if the leadership is not walking the talk, and they're just trying to train it, it doesn't work. You have to get that buy-in, and you have to be able to be that role model. You can't say, do as I say, not as I do. You know, old U.S. type environment, but you're right on in that. And in order to measure the success, and a lot of people, you mentioned rewards, incentives, stuff like that. Here's one thing I learned in my career. We talk about rewards and incentives, rewards and recognition. And where I think we missed the boat early in my career, you said this earlier about relationships. If you have a relationship with your employees, you will know what their goals or incentives would be. I remember first when I was a first leader, I would do this thing called, and we still do it today at eTech, getting to know you.
Mm-hmm.
And getting to know you is understanding, you know, why you got this job, what's your future goals, and not just business, personal. And I remember one of my employees told me their goal was to get a car. So everything I was doing on his incentive plan was money towards that car. Other people would be incentivized by career growth. So an incentive doesn't always have to be monetary. It could be an extra day off. They have kids. And I think by building that relationship, which you said earlier, is what's going to get it. Good deal. All right. So here's, I'm sorry.
Well, sometimes thank you. Just thank you. You're right.
Yeah.
Money, of course, but alongside the reward and recognition, Jim, there has to be some bravery, because if somebody is continuing to work in the old way and creating a culture of exception, then very quickly other people are going to go, well, why is nobody, and especially if they're senior, why is nobody having a word with Jim? You know, sometimes you need to have some tough conversations, and sometimes you need to say to people, do you know what? Thank you very much for everything you've done, but we're living in two different universes, and now is the time to say thank you and goodbye for the greater all.
It's funny. I'll give you my quote I used to use when I was a frontline leader. I'm releasing you to your destiny, because your destiny's not here.
Wow. But I also really like what you just said, Jim, and maybe that comes back to that servant leadership. I think as a leader, it's hard to do, and people use time as an excuse. But if you're not tuning in, and if you're not tuning into the stuff that really matters to each individual, and acknowledging that that stuff one week could be different to the stuff next week, I don't think you're being a great leader. And for me, that is what servant leadership is. That's sort of, you know, helping them get the car. And then when they've got the car, maybe it's something else, but tuning into that stuff, because they're the folk that are going to get you through. They're the, you know, all of that.
I'm with you 100%. I learned that a long time ago. Without them, I don't have a job. And I think that's the problem sometimes when people think they're a boss versus a leader. And servant leadership is, as simple words I can put it, put the needs of others first before myself. That's really all it is. And you've nailed it, just helping others. Because if you help others, it helps you. Good deal. All right, here's our last question before we open it up. So this one, I want to talk about measurement, because people in the AI space and people talking, here's what they talk about. They really talk about a lot of measuring everything. People measure 10,000 different things. But like, how do you know if the culture actually worked? Number one, instead of looking at, like, we talk about training, right? Not like, because people measure training completion dates as well. Like, really what I'm wondering, what do you think you should measure going forward into 2026 beyond the traditional stuff to see if the training, the development that we talk about actually worked? Do you have any insight on that? It's a tough one.
I know that at Steps, we are trying to get better at helping clients to identify. So sometimes it's not written. I have a belief that Steps
that
should be doing all it can, but it's on the client to kind of to care about this stuff. And one of the obstacles, frankly, Jim, is that often learning and development teams are, it's the few doing a lot of stuff for the many, right? And when they've finished their important project that's involved us, when we're still encouraging them to, and they should start measuring before you start and during and after, often they're off to the next thing, right? So that can be an obstacle, right? I think that what we do is we try and take a temperature check on knowledge and confidence of the people we're working with before,
love that,
during and then after, and measuring that, and has your knowledge and confidence gone up? But the most powerful thing, I think, Jim, the most compelling answer to your question is what I said before, is get stories and then push them out in whatever you're, however you through your intranet or whatever. But if Bob in the mailroom has really gone the extra mile, he's going to get more attention than somebody in a suit in the boardroom, right? So collecting those stories, those success stories from ordinary folk that have actually gone the extra mile, I think that's, in terms of measurement, A, finding those stories of success and then sharing them is inspiring for others. Because sometimes they go, Bob's doing it. Bob in the mailroom. And you go, yeah, are you? And you go, oh, well, maybe I'll do it because he's doing it rather than because some big cheese says do it.
I love that philosophy. And I will tell you, I don't see it as much as we should. And I'm going to make a change in my own organization for that, because there are these great stories of people doing great things. And while we might measure and tell them how great they did, it's really about exploding it so everybody sees how great Bob was, to your point. Yeah. I love the success stories. We have lots of them, by the way. But I think where I personally missed the mark on this one was good coaching for me today. So thank you. I might tell my teams what so-and-so did, but we're 4,000 agents globally in 3 countries. We need to start telling everybody what everybody did. I got to do a better job at that. That was a good one. So listen, this has been awesome. How would people who want to learn from you get in touch with you, number one? And obviously, we'll put your LinkedIn on the bottom of this. In the last week, I just want to recap a couple things I learned and then give you an opportunity to tell people how to get in touch with you. But man, learn from other people. That was our first segment. I love that. Mentors. Training is not necessarily development. So using the drama based on your development and share those experiences. I took some notes. I loved your part with see it, own it, change it. Change it's a good one. And of course, live it. So, you know, if you're listening, young leaders, and trying to learn things, like, you know, what you said, Simon, is good. Like, look in the mirror. When I started my career, I probably didn't look in the mirror as much as I should have. And then getting the buy-in from other people we talked about, which was great. And of course, everybody in the company needs to be a role model. You need to walk the talk. And it was just, man, it was a great 30-minute session today. Our podcasters, I know, that are listening are going to learn something. And for you to close this out, how do people get in touch with you if they want to learn more or follow you?
Thank you for asking that question, Jim. If I understand it, so it's simon@stepsdrama.com. or www.stepsdrama.com. That'll take you to our website, wherever you are in the world, and give you access points. I just wanted to say, can I say one more thing, Jim?
Absolutely.
I don't know how you engineer this, but because sometimes it's just privileged people like me that get to go to conferences like the ICMI, right? That's how we got on each other's radar.
Yes.
And we delivered a session that was about raising the bar in customer service. And there were people there from all sorts of different industries, right? Very different types of contact centers. Contact centers where you might be the difference between somebody living and not living, right? And contact centers where you're dealing with difficult conversations all day long. It's really hard. But wherever you can get in the room with peers from other sectors and just hear their stories and hear their successes and hear their vulnerabilities and pain. And frankly, it's the last one where I think real learning. It was such a pleasure. I thought that was a really, really good conference because it encouraged people to kind of listen to each other. But if you could bottle that thing about important people in the delegate audience just sort of letting their shields down and going, oh my goodness, that's what you do every day. I find myself quite humbled because I realize what I do is not as dangerous as what you do, but also just sharing those stories so they can go, do you know what? I've had that too, mate. I've had that too. And I've been doing it for 30 years and I still don't know what the answer is. I want to surround myself with people in terms of learning who are still going, I've been doing it for 30 years and I still don't know what the answers are. Those are the people I want to work with. Frankly, yeah. So if you could bottle that shared experience thing, that's gold.
Well, you got to come to Vegas then, because Vegas, CCW in Vegas is a big event that we'll be at, and we'll have to connect again. That's in June, so I'd love to see you and spend some time with you. As a matter of fact, I'm speaking with my team. I know we'll have to get these things up. Well, we'll make sure that everybody knows when we post it out there, but it's in June. We're doing a workshop. It's about an hour and a half session, which is what you talked about. Very interactive, talking about real problems, not trying to sell anything, just literally talking about performance, metrics, culture, change management. a lot of the things that we all have opportunities with. Typically, it's about 300 people in that room. It's about 5,000 people at the whole event, but I hope to see you there in Vegas for sure. And thank you guys for listening. Again, Simon, it's been awesome. I'm so glad we met. I'm so glad we got to talk about this. We have to do another one. We're going to take some notes from everybody and hopefully we can get somebody else to tell us some things as well. But thank you so much for spending time with us today. It has been an absolute pleasure. Your contact information is below. Click to subscribe to go ahead. And guys, we enjoyed this. Have a great day.
Thank you very much, Jim. A pleasure talking to you. And if I may, just out of an abundance of politeness, because I believe in trying to be a good citizen, thank you to Kate Browse, who I think brought me to your attention and nominated me for this podcast. So thank you, Kate. I think you're rather wonderful. And so are you, Jim. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kate, for connecting us. You guys have a great day. And thanks again for joining us, Simon. Looking forward to many more with you.